All right, welcome to Locked On Warriors, your podcast on all things Warriors. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News. So I put out a call for mailbag questions earlier this week, and I got a ton of good ones. I'm going to try to get to as many of them as I can, which means maybe rushing through a few, but I'm going to answer all of them. I've got questions about Obi Toppin's fit, the goals for the front office, some free agent targets, but I'll stop wasting time and just get to the first one from El Padrino, who writes in, "Why are these analysts so obsessed with the Warriors trading a top five pick for Marcus Smart? He shoots way too many threes. He's 6 foot three with Draymond probably playing center. The closing lineup will be too small against the Lakers, Clippers, and teams with big wing players." I'm glad that somebody brought up Marcus Smart, because this is a name that has made the rounds as far as a TPE candidate for the Warriors for a few weeks now. And look, it's an interesting name. If you think about what the Warriors need, they need a perimeter defender who is versatile, and they need somebody who can handle the ball and play make, and Marcus Smart can do those things. But I do think that there are real concerns with his fit with Draymond as far as being a three-point shooter. Marcus Smart is getting better as a three-point shooter, but I don't know that he's necessarily at the point where you would respect him. He's willing to chuck it, right? The percentages have climbed, but he's still not a prolific three-point shooter by any stretch. And you can, you know, in a playoff scenario, probably play off of him in order to guard Klay and Steph Curry and not worry too much about it, just like they do with Draymond. And then there is a size issue. I will say this. Marcus Smart is one of the best, not only point guard defenders in the league, and he probably is. He's one of the best overall defenders in the league. He can legit guard probably four positions. He is strong. I don't mind him fronting centers even in some cases. He's short, but he's a long player. He's a strong player. You could do a lot worse. I mean, having Marcus Smart is going to improve the defense, period, end of story. Yeah, there are concerns with how he would fit with the closing lineup. If you are giving up too much size, I think maybe overall you're probably not. But what El Pergino says, in a matchup against the Lakers and the Clippers, who are overwhelmingly big, yeah, you're giving up quite a bit there. If you're going to just trust Draymond Green against the Lakers to guard Anthony Davis, which we've seen mixed results this past season, and I guess you're asking Klay Thompson or Andrew Wiggins to guard LeBron. Well, they have a lot of size elsewhere. The Clippers, you need probably somebody to guard Kawhi and somebody to guard Paul George. I'm not that much more worried about the size they have on the rest of the roster. I think you could do that with Klay and Marcus Smart and Andrew Wiggins. You can guard those two guys as well as, you know, basically anybody, and Draymond Green, as well as anybody else can in the league. I'm not that concerned about size. The league overall is trending smaller. All of this is a way to say is there's no freaking way that the Warriors are getting Marcus Smart. I don't know why this idea is perpetuated across Warriors Twitter. I don't understand it. Why in the world would the Celtics do that? The only argument I've heard for the Celtics trading Marcus Smart to the Warriors is for cap relief. I just don't see that being that big of a factor for the Celtics. Yeah, maybe they want cap relief at some point in the future, but they don't need it now. They need it when extensions for Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and these guys, you know, when they have to pay those guys. That's when they're going to need the cap relief, if at all. Like, they might not need it. They actually don't need it. They would want it, right? Ownership would just want it. They can afford to pay all of them. Or I should say they have the ability to pay everybody what they're going to make. They have their bird rights and et cetera. It's only if they want the cap relief. So that's an assumption number one. The second assumption is that if they do want the cap relief, it would come by trading Marcus Smart and maybe not Gordon Hayward. Okay, so that's assumption number two that you're making. Assumption number three that you're making is that they would even imagine trading Marcus Smart to the Warriors, who everybody anticipates will make a vault back into contention next season. Why would you do that? If you're the Celtics and your ultimate goal is to win a championship, make your team worse and make another contender better. That makes no sense. Well, not everybody can give them a top five pick. True. Why would they want a top five pick? They don't want a top five pick. They don't want to add another rookie to this group. They are good now. They have title aspirations now. They spent years, using draft picks and trying to get better. They are at the point now where they have a legit superstar in Jason Tatum. They have great complementary role players, high-level role players, borderline all-star level role players in Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown, and maybe Gordon Hayward if you could ever put it together, and Marcus Smart. Why would they do that? So I'm putting to bed the Marcus Smart thing. Let's stop with this, all right? Good. At YNREEE writes in, Obi Toppin seems like a perfect fit for the Warriors to me. He could be a 20-point-a-night scorer playing the power forward position. He was a man among boys in college ball. Why aren't the Warriors higher on him? I don't know what you're reading. The Warriors are high on Obi Toppin. They've been high on Obi Toppin for months now. He's very much in play for the top five pick. I think we're not hearing so much about Obi Toppin now because he was so dominant in college, and we were talking about him pretty often during the season. Now is the time where you're kind of going back and trying to find these draft sleepers and guys. We're talking about guys more now, I just think from a media perspective. We're talking about guys more now that we didn't talk about during the regular season, but we talked about Obi Toppin for the entire regular season. And he's still in play for the Warriors. Now, I actually think the Warriors are higher on Obi Toppin for them than I am on Obi Toppin for them. There are things I like about Toppin's game. Yeah, he's an incredible scorer. I mean, the guy can drain three-pointers. He hits nothing but net all the time. He can take guys off the dribble. He can dunk. He's a super athlete. He can shoot from basically and make shots from basically everywhere on the floor. I love his game offensively. He is going to walk into the NBA as a legit scoring option. Maybe not a 20-point-a-night scorer right away, but I could definitely see him at 18 points a night, 16 points a night, something in that range on the Warriors. I could see him doing that. You can anchor a second unit with him as your main scorer. Very much in play. A huge value for the Warriors, even in the top five. My questions are, defensively, what can he do? There are huge concerns with the way he moves laterally. He's kind of slow on the uptake a little bit. Doesn't read offenses particularly well. And there's some concerns. There's some red flags. Now, some people think he's got such a good feel offensively that ought to translate to the defensive side of the ball at some point. That if you're that smart on the offensive side of the ball, you should be also smart on the defensive side of the ball, which he didn't really show this last year. I tend to believe that. I think smart players are smart players. It doesn't matter what side of the ball you're playing. And maybe it was just a lack of effort or disinterest that could change at the NBA level. And if you're within the Warriors ecosystem, they tend to nudge people in that direction. So I like the fit for them. My concern is I think he has a pretty high ceiling. And it has nothing to do with his age. Okay, I just think that Obi Toppin... Do you want John Collins on the Warriors? Okay, a lot of people would say yes. I've actually gotten the name John Collins quite a bit as a potential target for them, and I don't think the Hawks have any plans on trading John Collins anytime soon. But imagine John Collins on the Warriors. That's Obi Toppin, basically. There are a lot of things to like there. You can play him at the four. You can play him at the five. He's going to score a bunch of points. Think Amari Stoudemire. Think Jonathan Collins. But defensively, there are definitely issues. Can you play him in a closing lineup? Who does he guard in crunch time? Those are real questions. He is not strong enough to guard other centers, I don't think, especially if we talk about the bigger centers in the league. And so I wonder about his fit within certain lineups. Is he limited to basically being a high-level scorer who needs to be bracketed by other defenders, and therefore you're limiting what you can do with lineups? Or is he just a bench guy? Is he Enes Kanter, right? With a different skill set, but a similar ceiling where this could be your second big off the or your third big off the bench or whatever, who anchors second units and can be a scorer on second units, but maybe that's about it and is limited in playoffs and crunch time situations. Last one before we go to break. DJ writes in, could Tomas Satoransky be a good fit? He's a 6'7" backup point guard, can play 1-3 if need be, stuck on a crappy Bulls team. I like Satoransky as a potential fit. I think he kind of checks these boxes that if you're the Warriors, you need to check when you're looking for a backup point guard. I wrote last week that they need to go after a backup point guard. I'm anti-traditional backup point guard, however. I just think that those players are way too limited in today's game, that they give up too much defensively, and they're usually not good enough offensively to make up for that, right? That's why they're coming off the bench for the most part. Satoransky, though, is 6'7". He can guard three different positions. He is a good long-range shooter. There are things to like about his game, but I think he's making $10 million this season, maybe next season too. That seems pricey to me for a backup. Yeah, maybe he can play alongside Klay and Steph, and he probably could, and there are things to like there. He could be an option for the TPE. I wouldn't rule him out, but he wouldn't be plan A, B, or C, right? He's going to be low on the totem pole when it comes to options there, so could be a fit. Probably not the best fit, probably not the ideal situation for the Warriors this offseason, but could be in the mix. Let's keep the mailbag going next. This is Locked On Warriors. Joseph Richards writes in, is it possible that Nikola Mirotic comes back to the NBA and the Warriors sign him? I am fascinated by Mirotic. That was a crazy situation. He was a free agent last summer and decided against huge contracts to go back to Spain to play and be around, you know, family and be where he's comfortable, take less money, but be on a winning team, be the best player on a team. And I respect that decision. Now, I don't know whether or not he has the hunger to get back. I wish somebody would go over there and do a story on it. I think that would be a really interesting thing. Who knows? But if he does come back to the NBA, he wants to win at a high level, right? We know this. That's why he went back. He wasn't winning at a high level. But he also wants to get a huge opportunity. I think you can get both of those things on the Warriors. He's a guy who could play the five for them, I think, in certain situations. A really good scorer. Obviously a proven three-point shooter. Could space the floor for Golden State, no doubt. Defensively, I think he's better than people give him credit for. I mean, he's got length, he's got size, and he can move, you know? And I think you could, with just that, you could do some stuff. Definitely could play the four next to Draymond. I think he would be a great fit in a lot of lineups for them. Would he take the amount of money that the Warriors could offer? Would he take the mid-level? I don't know, because now you're sacrificing being the best player on the team, which he is currently, and you're sacrificing a ton of money, which you've already sacrificed. So I don't know if you want to do that again in order to grow the Warriors, but, you know, if his one goal is to win an NBA title, I think the Warriors, the Rockets, the Lakers, the Clippers all make a lot of sense for him if you were to make an NBA comeback. Jay writes in, the Warriors seem to be linked to players that fit their system. Is the coaching staff pushing for that, or is that also the emphasis of the front office? That's a really good question, and the reason it's a good question is because if the front office is pushing for it, well, then it's probably going to happen that way. If the coaching staff is pushing for that, look, Steve Kerr has a lot of say in that front office. He is, you know, part of the front office, basically. But he doesn't have full say. Bob Myers does, of course. And so from a roster construction standpoint, Bob Myers does have that authority. I think Steve Kerr is pushing more for that quote-unquote fit of their system in a retroactive way. He looks at the way guys like Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston fit in, the production that you lose when Kevin Durant walks away, that the way that he's approached the center position under his tenure, that bullpen approach I talk about all the time, those are the things that Steve Kerr looks at and he is familiar with and he knows how to implement, he knows how to win with, right? And so you can't fault him for that, but I do also wonder whether or not Bob Myers has a similar outlook. Does he want to evolve the team a little bit? Because he pushed for he brought Kevin Durant in. That evolved the team beyond the Andrew Bogut, Harrison Barnes, Leandro Barbosa, you know, era, right? They went in a new direction with Kevin Durant. Steve Kerr adjusted, and he adjusted well. I think he would adjust again, where he's going to have to. We're seeing, like, Andrew Wiggins is unlike any player that Steve Kerr has had to coach, right? There are players that are going to come in that are obviously different than players that he had. I do wonder if they're trying to recreate the formula a little bit too much. But ultimately, I think they're going to go ahead and get the players that they need that make the most sense. But at the same time, Steph Curry is still Steph Curry. Klay Thompson is still Klay Thompson. Draymond Green is still Draymond Green. The players who fit with those guys are, like, the skill sets that they need to complement those guys are always probably going to be the same skill sets. And you don't have another dominant skill set like you did with Durant. And so you kind of go back to the pre-Durant days and say, okay, what were the things that worked, you know, when we won 73 games? That was a pretty good season. What were the things that worked there? What were the skill sets that we needed to complement these guys? Let's go get that again. I think there's value in that. In what order? Oh, this question comes from Uncle underscore Alchemy on Twitter. In what order do you think the front office values these three long term? Eric Paschal, Marquise Chris, Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole is at the bottom of those rankings, though I think that they were encouraged by what he showed last season. And then it's between Paschal and Chris. My guess would be Paschal more than Chris. I think Marquise Chris was a revelation last year. They like a lot of what he can do. He's a good rim runner. He dunks a ton. He's an adept passer. He's got good feel. He's got great chemistry with Steph Curry that he showed early in the season and in the preseason. Ultimately, though, I think Eric Paschal is the guy who can make the biggest leap and the biggest impact, especially in a playoff setting. You look at what he's able to do, just his novel skill set, his ability to get to the rim, to finish through contact. I talked to Bob Myers earlier this week, and he was talking about how rare that is. Okay, I wrote a story on Eric Paschal this week for the Mercury News. This part of it didn't really make the story, but he talked about how the Warriors have never had that combination of athleticism, explosiveness, and that ability to play through contact with, and that sort of physical way of play that Eric Paschal has. They've never had that, right? And so he provides that. And so I think they value that skill set. They value what it is that he can bring to the table. And if he can stabilize that three-point jump shot, if he can become above 30% three-point shooter, and he's able to space the floor next to Draymond Green, he could very well be a part of the closing lineup for the Warriors next season. He is in play to be that fifth guy in the Warriors' closing lineups next year, okay? Now, obviously, a lot of it depends on what happens this offseason, but Paschal is going to have a chance to win that job. He's going to come off the bench, but he's going to have a job. He's going to have a chance to win the job to be in the closing lineup. Josh writes in, what do you think is the ceiling for Andrew Wiggins? Never going to be an all-star, probably a good playmaker, third, fourth scorer, and a high-level, valuable defender who could probably do a really good job guarding ones and twos, and maybe even smother them to the way that like Andre Iguodala did. Probably won't ever hit that like genius level of defense that Iguodala had, but that ability to put Iguodala on guys one through three, that's the best case scenario for Andrew Wiggins, that he can guard guys one through three. So that's probably where Wiggins tops out. Not going to ever be worth the $27 million a year. Not going to make an all-star team, but could be a really helpful player. The Juan Toscano fan writes in, if the Warriors decide to acquire Aaron Gordon, what happens to Eric Paschal? I feel that it would be tough for the two to play together unless either of the two is able to get their jump shot together. Can the two coexist off the bench? First of all, if the Warriors acquire Aaron Gordon, there'd be a lot of things that they'd have to do with the TPE, and an additional, it'd be a three-step trade basically. But if they were able to get him, which I don't think they're going to be able to get him, but he's maybe the best case scenario for them this summer with the TPE. He would probably start, and you probably end up with Draymond Green at center. And that was an idea that John Hollinger floated out this week. And it's an interesting, thought exercise. And it depends on who that fourth guy, who the power forward is, who the new power forward is, if you're going to start Draymond Green at center. I don't think adding Rudy Gay to the mix is enough to move Draymond Green to center. But if you add Aaron Gordon, well, then you probably need to start him. And you're not moving Wiggins to the bench. And you're not moving Draymond to the bench. So I think Draymond would start at center, and with Aaron Gordon at the four, and with Wiggins at the three, and then Clay and Steph. But and then you could always bring Paschal off the bench. So I don't necessarily think that they would have to figure out how to work together that much. I mean, you can make Eric Paschal ostensibly the Aaron Gordon backup, right? Score first, power forwards, okay? I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the two could coexist, but obviously Gordon would have to continue to get better as a three-point shooter, which he has, and Paschal would have to get a lot better as a three-point shooter, which he's working on. Zip writes in, what would it take for the Warriors to land Yusuf Nurkic this offseason? Do you think that the Trailblazers are invested enough in Hassan Whiteside to let him go? The Trailblazers are not invested in Hassan Whiteside. In fact, the things that I'm hearing is that they are very much over the Whiteside experience, just like the Miami Heat were over the Whiteside experience. Nurkic makes, what, $13, $14 million a year? That contract for Yusuf Nurkic with his production is a steal. There is no way that Portland is giving up on Nurkic. They are very much in on Nurkic. Whiteside is probably out after this year. I think he's on his deal expires this offseason, so he walks, probably takes a minimum elsewhere. No, I don't think he's a fit for the Warriors because he doesn't pass the ball and he's not as good as a pick and roll finisher as people think he is. And Nurkic is staying in Portland. He's very much part of their future. Now, there is something to be said about whether or not they can make it work between him and Zach Collins, but I think they're actually more apt to move off of Zach Collins before they're ready to move off of Nurkic, but that's just me guessing. I'll get to the last few mailbag questions next. This is Locked On Warriors. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Please rate, review, and say nice things. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to me at WGoldberg@BayAreaNewsGroup.com. Let's get to our final mailbag questions. This one comes from A-Rod, who writes in, is Andre Roberson an option for the minimum? I think Andre Roberson is very much an option for the minimum. Charles Hamilton and I talked about this, I don't know, a few weeks ago. At the minimum, it's a great value because he is one of the best players in the league at a specific thing. And if you can get that at the minimum, that's worth it. And he's one of the best perimeter defenders when healthy. And we don't know if he's healthy. He's basically hasn't played in 2 years. But if he's healthy, if he can regain what he was defensively on the perimeter when in his best years in Oklahoma City, that's really valuable to have in like a break in case of emergency type of situation if you're Golden State. Look, I talked about what Wiggins's ceiling was in the last segment as an Andre Iguodala type of defender, but we don't know if he's going to get there. There was encouraging signs, positive signs last year in Golden State, but that was a very small sample size. We'll see if he kind of has that interest defensively for the balance of an entire season, and we don't even know what that's going to look like in a playoff setting, right? Roberson, we know, with Pelpy, can be that. All right, so if the Wiggins thing doesn't necessarily work out defensively and Klay Thompson takes a little bit to get back to normal, I don't know. Does Draymond Green, is he age? Is he more, like, can you put him on LeBron's and Kawhi's? I don't know. You might be forced to put him on fours and fives and not threes like that. We don't know what Klay Thompson's going to be able to do coming off the knee surgery. We don't know what Wiggins is going to be able to do. So if you can have a guy like Roberson, just in case, and you can put them in when you needed another defender like that, insanely valuable. If you can get at the minimum, it's a no-brainer. I think you could do a lot worse at guy number 14 or 15 than Roberson. Again, if everything checks out health-wise. Gorov writes in, if you were the GM of the Warriors and you had to pick, would you prioritize maximizing winning now or accumulating assets for the future? As we saw with Boston, it's hard to truly do both, but what are your thoughts? This is a really interesting question. If I'm the GM of the Warriors, I maximize this window right now. But I don't know that that necessarily means moving off the top five pick, which is a question I also get asked all the time. It's easy enough to say that they should move off the top five pick, but it really depends on the player you get. And I just don't know what player you're going to get with a top five pick. Combine that with the TPE or whatever it takes to absorb a salary. I just don't know who's out there. Like, if you can get an Aaron Gordon, that makes sense, right? But why would Orlando move Aaron Gordon to the Warriors? They want to contend right now. They want to be a playoff team. So why take a step back? And there's a lot of teams out there with players who make sense for the Warriors who might not want to take a step back, right? Like the Pacers. Another name that comes up all the time from the Pacers is Domantas Sabonis. The Pacers are very much in love with Domantas Sabonis. He is a core piece for them. Why would they trade him for a top five pick? Miles Turner, same thing. Why would you trade him for a top five pick? You can argue that the fit doesn't work between Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis. Sure, it doesn't work. Like, they probably need to make a decision there. But you could trade those guys for other players who are proven. Right? You're not limited to trading those guys for a top five pick. The Pacers want to stay in the playoff picture. They don't want to take a step back. And so I'll say this, I don't, like, the Warriors having this top five pick is not a step back for them. This is not a step back for them. Every team has a first round pick. The Warriors were just bad last year. This top five pick is a step up for them, and you need to view it like that. Just like the 28th pick was a chance to add talent, so is the top five pick. It's just a chance to add talent. If you make the right pick, you can add talent to this roster and build something for the future while also maximizing this championship window. And that's why I always say the Warriors need to find somebody with this pick who can contribute right away, who can walk in, hit threes, guard several positions, help play make. Just if he needs to do two of those three things, preferably three of those three things. If you could do that, he could play right away. And then potentially develop into something in the future. This is a really good opportunity for Golden State. You don't give that away just for anything. Now, if you can find a player worth getting rid of for the top five pick, then you do it. But the other part of this, too, is if you get a good player and he looks good in Golden State, you can then package that player later for, say, Giannis or Embiid or Benson or whatever pipe dream player that you want, you can maybe create a package based on that player. You don't create that package based on some scrub veteran or whatever. Like, you don't create that package on Marcus Smart, okay? You need a player with that kind of upside, too. That's insanely valuable. The Warriors have no other means to add that type of player. We don't know what Minnesota's pick is going to be next year. You take this. You use this pick. You take what's been given to you here. Our last question, Gary writes in, between Okoro, Vassell, Bay, and Patrick Williams, who do you like the most for the Warriors? Who do you think the Warriors will end up liking the most? Okoro, Isaac Okoro, Devin Vassell, Sadiq Bay, Patrick Williams. Of that group, Isaac Okoro, to me, is on the bottom of that list. I also think he's probably on the bottom of the Warriors list. Too many questions with his top-end athleticism and too many questions with what he could do offensively. Okay, he is not the genius playmaker that Andre Iguodala was. He's not even as good a defender as Iguodala was, even though he could probably grow into that. He's maybe the best perimeter defender in the league, or in the draft, I should say. And on a one-on-one and a team defender basis. But those other guys aren't that far behind, and they do a lot more offensively, I think. Sadiq Bey, kind of a Robert Covington type, which I think a lot of Warriors fans would want. I always argue that Covington would be a terrible fit for the Warriors because he can't move the ball at all. Like, you don't trust him to dribble, and he's not a very good passer. And so, yeah, you could stick him in the corner and let him shoot threes. But when have the Warriors ever done that with a player? They don't stick guys in the corner and have them shoot threes. That's not what they do. Defensively, I think he's slightly overrated. I don't think he guards twos and ones particularly that well. That's why the Rockets have him basically playing center. Okay? So, Sadiq Bey, look, there's the Villanova connection. That's a real thing. The Warriors coaches, their front office, have a good relationship with Jay Wright. I'm sure Jay Wright is talking up Sadiq Bey quite a bit. They like him. They do. He is in the mix, I would say, for the top five pick. I don't like him as much as they do, probably. Patrick Williams from Florida State, I like him a lot. There are some concerns with what he can do offensively, still very raw on that end, but very like kind of in that P.J. Tucker mold. He can shoot threes from the corner. He can do some stuff with the ball, even though he has a really bad turnover rate. But defensively, you could place him at the four. You could place him at the five. He can provide needed rim protection for this team, especially if you play him next to Draymond in small ball lineups. I like Patrick Williams a ton. I tweeted out my draft board today. He wasn't in it, but he was like 6 or 7. He wasn't in my top five, but he was like 6 or 7. Okay, he might sneak his way into the top five. Who was in that top five was Devin Vassell, his teammate. I love Devin Vassell. I have him at number 3 on my draft board for the Warriors. I talk about this all the time. They need to find their Kawhi Leonard in this draft. The guy who can walk in, play a 3-and-D role right away, and then potentially grow into something more. That's Devin Vassell. He's going to be able to. He was a knockdown shooter at Florida State. He's going to be able to walk right into the NBA and hit threes. Terrific length, 6'11" wingspan. Okay, so he could, and he's got a high release point. So he's going to be able to shoot over guys, both in the mid range and from 3-point range. Defensively, unbelievable team defender. Always communicating on the floor. Obviously, a good 1-on-1 defender with that length and his versatility. I think he can walk in right away, play the 3 or the 4 for Golden State. You can play him in closing lineups at the 4 next to Draymond Green. He's going to make the defense better day one. And so I've got Vassell right now at number 3. Anthony Edwards is number 1. Tyrese Halliburton is number 2. It wouldn't surprise me the more stuff I watch and the more people I talk to if Vassell sneaks up to number 2 for me on my Warriors big board. But I like Vassell the most. I would stay away from Okoro. There's just too many questions on offense. Sadiq Bey is okay, but that's towards the back end of the lottery for me, if anything. I like Vassell, and I like Pat Williams. I like the Florida State guys, which is weird because I grew up hating the Seminoles. I was a Canes fan growing up, but I like their players. You know, they get these long guys. They get the Jonathan Isaac types. Like, they have a type. And they tend to work out in the NBA. And I think Vassell and Pat Williams both will. That's it for today's Locked On Warriors. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Stay safe.